Codega is a guide and a storyteller, escorting you through the night, lighting the way, warding off thieves, ghosts, demons, and other oddities. Along the journey, his companions would often share with him the most curious of stories that he'd record in his codex. Perhaps you just might find yourself traveling with the Codega and sharing one of yours. Good evening, and welcome to Codega's Codex of Curiosities. Tonight's curiosity is all about portals, time travel, and Disneyland. Yeah, you heard that right, Disneyland. So, who do we have on who's going to come talk about that? Well, we have Walter Bosley. Walter Bosley is an investigator of historical occult mysteries. He's an author of pulp fiction novels and a screenwriter who has appeared on History Channel's Ancient Aliens. Walter Bosley lives in California, and he is going to bring the heat when it comes to this topic. He has some fantastic insights and great knowledge. He has written countless numbers of books. I would say, I think around 12, over a dozen books. So we're going to hear from him tonight. But before we do that, let's take care of some general housekeeping. Click that like. If you're new here, subscribe and have the bell hit for notifications to stay up to date on all the new content. All right. And with that, I want to tell our listeners, not our viewers, but our listeners who are listening to this on Spotify, Apple, Google, Amazon, whichever platform, you need to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Well, why is that? Well, our YouTube channel has numerous other videos. So not just these regular interviews, I have other great content that I'm putting out. I try to put out maybe one a week or, you know, extra content, one every 2 weeks. You know, it depends how busy I'm getting. But what I want you to do is come on over to Codega's Codex of Curiosities to our YouTube channel and subscribe. Check out what we have. I have a backlog of all my original stuff when I was with the Lost Frequency podcast. So that's all there. But I have all my new stuff as well. And I'm working on something special. Hopefully when this releases, I'll be pretty close to dropping a really awesome. Maybe it's going to be a documentary. I don't know yet. We'll see. We'll see what it turns out to be. But it's going to be really, really fascinating. So I want you all to make sure you like, subscribe, comment on the videos. And if you haven't done so, join the Facebook group as well. Leave us some messages in there and I'll, you know, message you up. And if you haven't sent me a friend request on Facebook, by all means, please send me a friend request. But let me know that you know, it's because of Codega's Codex of Curiosities why you're sending me a friend request, because, you know, we're all getting inundated with all these friend requests, and most of them are just bots. And I know you guys aren't bots, so send me a friend request and I'll make sure to accept it. All right. On that note, we're going to jump and bring on Walter here right away. All right. Welcome this evening to Codega's Codex of Curiosities. And tonight I have an esteemed guest, Mr. Walter Bosley. So I want to welcome Walter to the show.
Hey, good to be here, Rye. I'm looking forward to this topic. It's a favorite discussion of mine.
When I heard it the other day, I was like I said earlier, I was just enamored with it. I was thought this was an amazing topic, and that topic, of course, is if you want to tell our guests, our listeners, I mean, sorry,
well,
what the topic is.
It's this book here. This is my first nonfiction book, by the way, and it's Latitude 33, Key to the Kingdom: The Arcane Science and Hermetic Engineering of Disneyland. But of course, it gets into things beyond the confines of the park.
Oh, fantastic. I am looking forward to this. I was just talking with some friends of mine prior to this, and they heard that I had you coming on, and they were pretty jealous. They're like, wow, they said cool. that episode was fantastic. Yeah. And I also know that you wrote another book too, kind of a fiction book, kind of based on all this information. I think it's called I Will See You in Time.
Yes, it's the time travel novel. I thought if I had that handy, I would. What's interesting is after I wrote Latitude 33, I was looking to continue the research on the intersection of the telluric currents that we'll be talking about here, that are the intersection is in Disneyland. So I was kind of following them out of the park through Southern California. And anyway, long story short, that led to what became my big nonfiction trilogy, the Empire of the Wheel trilogy, an investigation of weird occult murder and espionage here in the San Bernardino Valley. And while I was, when I finally decided to write that book, because I investigated the Empire of the Wheel mystery for 2 years before I even decided I was going to write a book. That's how obsessed I was with what I was finding. At the same time that I was writing that Empire of the Wheel book, I started writing a time travel novel, which, used a lot of the concepts that are in this book in time travel. Essentially, the travelers use carousels to travel through time and space. So,
which is really unique, you know, and I had messaged you earlier, and I messaged the that one movie years and years ago, I think back in the 80s, called Something Wicked Comes This Way.
Yes, and Something Wicked When This Way Comes, the Ray Bradbury
novel.
That's it.
Thank you. And they use the carousel to transport the people in time. They went backwards, they went back in time, they went forwards, they went forward.
Right,
they grew old.
Yeah, he can make you old or take the years off your life. And that definitely, that was on my mind when I was, you know, researching for this particular book. And I'll stop flashing it. It's just a habit, you know.
That's all right. It's a great book.
Oh, thank you. It was my first nonfiction book, and in my opinion, it shows it. I need to go back and do a better polish now that I think I've gotten a little better at the nonfiction writing. But it really it has been an integral part of my research, even on all my other books, because it introduced me to the mysteries of the telluric current, or popularly referred to as the ley lines, you know. Aspects of this research have just continued to pop up in all the other things that I write. So this really is, I look at it as I'm pulling the thread of one big picture mystery, and this was my gateway into that.
This is your doorway into it all, which is kind of ironic too, being that we talk about, it talks about portals and whatnot. So it is a gateway as well.
Indeed.
So do you want to start and tell us, like, what spurned this? What caused you to write this book?
Well, it all starts with a personal weird experience. You have to go back a little earlier to December of 1979, when I had what I describe as a personal awakening or enlightenment experience. And essentially it was literally that. I woke up, it was a Sunday morning in December of 79. I was on the holiday break from school. I was 16, I was in high school. And I woke up and everything was different. I was different. I'm looking around. It was a weird, strange experience in itself that impacted my life. It still does to this day. And that had happened in December of 79. And then, I want to say about a year later, I had a very strange dream that over the course of decades, parts of that dream would come true. In other words, I would find myself in the places and the situations that I had dreamed years before. So it was kind of a glimpse into my own future, this particular dream. And that was in January of 81. Well, a month later in February, some friends and I went to Disneyland. Now, you got to remember, back in 1981, Disneyland was a little bit different than it is now. If you went, like, if it wasn't summertime, it was during the school year, and you went in the middle of the week, I mean, my gosh, by 5 or 6 p.m., the place was virtually empty, believe it or not. And that was when they were first doing the unlimited passport ticket. And now when you go to Disneyland, you just buy a ticket and everything's, you have unlimited access to all the rides and stuff. Back then they had the A through E ticket books still, but they were introducing the unlimited passport ticket. And that's what we would get, because when you're a Southern California kid, you just go, back then you would go to Disneyland a lot. It was, you know, like a very often or regular thing. So some friends and I, you know, we went on it was a Wednesday, middle of the week. And I think we had the day off from school or something, you know, and so we went to Disneyland, and it was in the sometime around 9 o'clock or a little bit after 9 p.m. A couple of friends and I were riding the carousel, because, you know, doesn't matter how old you are, you ride all the rides. I mean, I just
exactly, especially when you got it an all-inclusive pass.
You know, that's right. You know, I just turned 60 in October, and if I went to Disneyland tomorrow, I would ride all the little kiddie rides, Dumbo and all that. You just do the whole thing, right? You're particularly now, because you're paying a fortune. By gosh, you're going to ride everything.
Exactly.
So we were riding the carousel, and I saw this older gentleman, who I, you know, at that time I said, yeah, he's probably about 70 years old, wearing a black suit, no tie, white shirt. And he had snow white hair and beard, close cropped, you know, short, neatly cut hair and a neatly trimmed beard. And he was just standing there. If you know your geography of Disneyland, you'll know that where the carousel is, there's this walkway that goes between Dumbo and Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. And it leads you back to the teacups and then the Matterhorn beyond that. And so he was standing on that pathway, you know, as I just described, and he was watching the carousel go around, and he was just, you know, like watching this thing, like he was in awe of it. And, you know, went around a couple of times. I saw him 2, 3, 4 times. And then came the spin around that he wasn't there. It's like, okay, whatever. For some reason, I noticed this old guy. So we get off the carousel and we head back along that same path. We go past the teacup ride. And at that time they had a bench, beneath the monorail track next to one of the columns of the monorail, holding up the monorail track. And he was sitting on the bench, this old guy. And I just felt compelled to strike up a conversation with him. I can't explain why. I just, something made me approach him and ask, you know, hey, you having a good time? Just the small chit chat. To this day, I cannot remember the sound of the man's voice. I cannot remember his voice. I just remember his excitement, his energy, this look of wonder in his eyes. You know, this was like the most amazing place he had ever seen. I'd grown up going there. But, you know, so my friends and I were chatting with him. We find out his name is Alfred, and this is his first time at Disneyland, and he's getting low on his tickets. I think he only had like one A ticket and one E ticket or something. And so, he wanted to ride, It's a Small World. So we took him over to It's a Small World and we rode it with him. He sat up front. We sat behind him. And the whole time he was just, you know, now most people, everybody makes fun of It's a Small World, you know, the little dolls and the incessant song and stuff. But yeah, he just thought it was wonderful. And we get off the ride and we walk back to where he was at the bench. And, you know, something again compelled me. I took my passport ticket, my unlimited passport, and I gave it to him. In fact, we pinned it on the lapel of his coat. You would have thought that I had given him a pot of gold. He was incredibly grateful. I mean, noticeably very grateful. And I said, hey, you know, the park's open for like another hour and a half or so. With this ticket, you can go ride whatever you want as many times as you can before the park closes, you know. And goes, oh my gosh, thank you, very, you know, thank you, thank you. And off he went back into Fantasyland and, you know, turned a corner and that was it. And my friends and I went along our way. And so, you know, that seemed to be it. I did a nice thing for an old man at Disneyland. But it stuck with me for years, you know. I just had a feeling that there was more to this encounter than what was on the surface. And years later, 11 years later, by this time I'm working for the FBI and I had been assigned to Manhattan and I'm on my lunch hour. And there's a bookstore there. I don't know if it's still there in Columbus Circle called the Coliseum Bookstore, but I would go there on my lunch breaks. And I was in the UFO and weird phenomena, you know, the weird section that we all love.
Yes, exactly.
And I had, in the intervening years after that encounter with old man Alfred at Disneyland, I had in the late 80s, mid to late 80s, learned about ley lines, okay, telluric current. And these guys back then, I forget who they were, but they had done an analysis like around 1986 or something, in which they said at the intersections of these ley lines, there is a larger number of reports of strange phenomena, including UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot, what have you. It just seemed that there were clusters at the intersections of the ley line, which I came to know more accurately as telluric current. And so by 92, I was aware of that, and I had learned about the so-called ley lines then. And so there I am in the bookstore in 92, and I'm looking at this book. I pick up this book, The Old Straight Track. And it's about, you know, a guy who in 1928 had studied ley lines. And I thought, oh, these are those lines that I read about, that, you know, the clusters of UFOs at the intersections and all that stuff. And I look at the book in the front. It's by Alfred Watkins. Okay. And most people know who Alfred Watkins is now. And I open up the book, and that's when it really entered weird land, because there was a photograph of Alfred Watkins, and I kid you not, I'm just standing there stunned, because I'm looking at the face of the man I met at Disneyland 11 years prior. Same hair, same beard. It was him. It was his face. And
he was that age back in the...
At the time that he published the book, he was researching the book and published it, he was 69 years old. And remember, I had him pegged at 70 what I placed him at. And I'm just stunned. I'm like, wait a minute, what the heck? So then, you know, I look further and I realize, okay, he did the research in 27. He published the book in 1928. He died in 1935. How could I have seen him at Disneyland in California? Because he was in England. He was doing all this in England. How could I have seen him at Disneyland in 1981? Why can't I remember the sound of this guy's voice to be able to say, okay, did he have a British accent or anything? What the heck's going on here? So then for years after that, I, you know, was convinced I had some kind of weird encounter at Disneyland, and I can't answer the question. I can't explain it. Now, in the intervening years, what you have to understand is, remember, I had that enlightenment experience, okay, a little over a year before this encounter at Disneyland. I had had the dream, which showed me a premonition of years and years of my life to come, the month before, and then I have this encounter at Disneyland with this Alfred guy, okay? So after that, I had a mentor, both a professional in my career, national security community in the U.S., and also with esoterica and the occult and weird stuff. And that it was an uncle of mine. When he retired with 44 years in the U.S. intelligence community. And so he was really my kind of like my professional godfather, my mentor and all that. So he was teaching me how to develop, you know, the weird skills and things like that. This is a man who you know, taught me about psychic abilities. He taught me a method on how to go to a cemetery and basically necromancy, how to raise dead spirits and get information from them. I mean, so, and this was, you know,
that's quite the uncle.
Yeah. And this, he told me more than once, there were people in my professional life who were expecting me to know this stuff, know how to do it and learn how to do it. That's a whole story in itself, but this is what my life was for years and years. So you put on top of that, this weird experience with Alfred. So, I had asked my mentor, my uncle, because I had been thinking for myself and putting two and two together. And, I had asked him about time phenomena, time travel. I remember I asked him, in the early 90s, I said, is time travel possible? And he says, you're not ready to have that discussion yet. Like, when I asked him a few years later in the late 90s, you know, he said, hey, get in the car. Let's get in the car. We got to go for a ride. So we went out and we rode out into the countryside, and he stopped. And then he proceeded to tell me that at that time, you know, that would have been the U.S. government, because I was an Air Force officer when we had this conversation. He says, we figured that out about 100 years ago. And I'm having this conversation, you know. So there's all that in the background. Jump yes. forward to 2006.
Yeah.
And by this time, I've been friends with Greg Bishop. I'm sure you're familiar with Greg Bishop. And I've been kind of the informal, unofficial co-host of his show, Radio Misterioso, for a couple of years. And one day we're talking about Disneyland. The subject of Disneyland comes up. We're wondering why Club 33 is called Club 33. We had heard that, because it had 33 corporate sponsors, or the 33 corporate sponsors of Disneyland, whatever. Okay, so we pull up Disneyland online during the show. And what I noticed is the GPS coordinates, Disneyland is at 8118 or 1881. It's 8118. Anyway, it's at the 33rd degree north latitude. And by this time, of course, we were well aware of the weird phenomena, the strange things that happen between 30 degrees and 40 degrees north in a band around the globe, including the Egyptian pyramids, the JFK assassination, and on and so forth. So immediately we're like, ooh, Disneyland's at the latitude 33.
Yeah.
And wow. So naturally I had told Greg about the Alfred story. I'm pretty sure I was talking about it on that episode. And I thought, oh boy, okay. Could my Alfred encounter have anything to do with this strange latitude? So that was all of that. And that night on Greg's show is what I finally decided, you know, I had to jump into this. I had to dig into this, investigate it. And it resulted, of course, in the book, because the things I learned were just stunning to me. Things I had always loved the place, always been drawn to the place. But ultimately, what I learned was that the man who engineered physical Disneyland for Walt and his brother Roy was a man named C.V. Wood, who they met at SRI, the legendary Stanford Research Institute that's involved with remote viewing and all sorts of other weird things. Their guy is the guy who left SRI and became became an employee of the Disneys to be the head engineer of designing and putting together physical Disneyland. Now, he's the guy that SRI identified the location where they should build the park, because they thought they were going to build it out here in San Bernardino Valley. They were going to build it in LA. They were going to, you know, different places. But he said, you need to buy these 160 acres of citrus property in the heart of Anaheim, California, because our studies show that there's, you know, the freeways and blah, blah, blah. It'll be a good business decision. But SRI, if there was ever a company that would know something about telluric current and its strange properties, SRI is definitely one of those organizations. And C.V. Wood himself was deeply interested in psychic phenomena. He was good friends with a guy named Tom Swift, who was a wealthy philanthropist. He's also known for having headed up the search for Yeti, the abominable snowman. So this guy Swift was into this stuff. He and yeah. Wood were good friends, and he and Wood and another guy created this organization called the Mind Science Foundation. So they were into all this, what psychic phenomena does to the human consciousness. They were into all this, and he becomes an employee of the Disneys to physically engineer Disneyland. And I go into it in the book, but basically I believe, and I present the evidence in the book, that C.V. Wood used this opportunity to create a psychotronic device in a place. And it's my opinion that Disneyland is that, or was designed to be that and worked that way, until they made some changes in 1982, the year after my experience. But basically, Disneyland, the way it's physically constructed, there's an intersection, according to a guy named Sechery, who did the topographical and geomorphological analysis of the park, the physical location. He identified an intersection of three major telluric currents in the heart of Disneyland, specifically in Fantasyland. And up until 1982, that intersection was directly beneath the carousel. And so basically what I think Wood did was Disneyland sets in a bowl, okay? The carousel, while it sat in its original location, hypothetically, its rotation throughout the day would draw up the energy from the intersection of the telluric currents. It would draw it up and also spread it around, distribute it so that it would go out and canvas the park. But because Disneyland sits in a bowl, the energy would go through the park, go up the berm, and then come back down and remain contained in the park. Why do I think Wood did this? Simply to enhance the experience in a positive way. And you know, I get asked a lot, and we'll get into it, but I found nothing negative about this. This was all a guy who was into consciousness and psychic phenomena. And what he really wanted to do was just create this feeling of you were in another world and you were just the happiest place on earth, right? Magic Kingdom. You're just having a wonderful time. And that's what the experience of Disneyland was until they changed things. Now, what they changed was they redesigned Fantasyland and they moved the carousel about 30 feet back from its original position. So the carousel no longer sits above where this intersection of telluric currents been identified to me. So in my opinion, the device that is the park has been disengaged since 1982. And I'll throw one more little thing about 11 years after the year, the summer that I first saw that book in 1992 in New York, I find out later in 2006 that C.V. Wood died in 92, the same year that I made the Alfred Watkins connection. That's wow. That's in my opinion what we call a synchronicity.
Exactly. I totally agree. I totally agree.
So I go into the book what I think the Alfred experience could have been, multiple possibilities, but there's a long way around the barn to answer your question.
What do you actually believe that was? And we're all about the weird and the strange, you know, it's okay to, you know, to hypothesize, you know,
multiple possibilities. One of them could have been that nature, the cosmos, the universe, whatever you want to call it, contrived that a man who looked the spitting image of Alfred Watkins and had the name Alfred, it was contrived that he would be placed at Disneyland when I was there. And so the meeting would happen so that I would, down the road, when I saw the Alfred Watkins book, I would start thinking about Disneyland in those terms so that I would do the research that I did and write the book that I ultimately did. And of course, remember, I had had that premonition dream the month before. Yeah. So maybe this was my own subconscious from my own future, you know, having a guiding hand and or whatever, maybe my subconscious, because it could look further down, you know. Anyway, a contrivance of lookalikes and the same name and circumstances. Another possibility is that he could have been a tulpa, you know, just something I created from my subconscious because of, again, that premonition dream. Yet another possibility. We're getting to my two favorites now. One of them, and this has been this was my favorite for a long time, but now it's equal to the one after that. But one of them is that Alfred Watkins himself in 1927, when he was investigating the ley lines, stepped into an intersection and was transported across time and space to Anaheim, California, to Disneyland. And that I encountered the real Alfred Watkins. Now, for years, that was my favorite. It was like, yeah, oh boy, I hope that's the case, right? Because that would be the most exciting thing. But there's the problem of the Tuatha De Dananann of fairy lore. And that is starting with this book and in every single one of my other nonfiction books, my research, the Tuatha De Dananann keep showing up one way or another. And so this fourth possibility that I talk about in the book is that Alfred was one of them who, through glamoury, made himself look like Alfred Watkins, the author of that book and of that research. And why do I think this? Well, the book goes into the details of what C.V. Wood might have tapped into in Disneyland, specifically Fantasyland, and it happened around there, Fantasyland. Remember, when I gifted him my ticket, my passport ticket, he was incredibly grateful. You would have, like I said, you would have thought I'd saved his children, given him a pot of gold, whatever. Well, I learned long after that about the Tuatha De Dananann and generally the fairy folk. When you commit an act of sincere generosity, they love that. It's like you have passed a test of character with them and they reward you. And that's just the mm-hmm. just a taste of why I think he might have been one of the Tuatha De Dananann. Again, in the book, I go into, you know, the fine
details,
yeah, of why I think that, and I believe that they have made themselves known to me in other very strange and overt ways over the years. So yeah. I'm leaning more towards the Alfred I encountered was one of the Tuatha, again, using this magic, this glamoury that they can do in our minds, yeah. made himself look like Alfred Watkins, so that I would, you know,
follow this path.
Yeah exactly.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love every part of it. You know, it's quite magical, actually, you know, like this path that you're on. I'm just, before we go too far, mm-hmm. I want to go back to that when you were, I think, 16 in December.
Yes.
What exactly do you think that was when you woke up and there was like a slight difference in everything, you know? Yeah. Was it like a timeline shift, or was it a shift in consciousness, or
both? I think it was both. For years, I struggled with what was this, because this was intense. When I woke up, here's the thing. I woke up that morning, and the first thing, I wake up and I'm like, and I lift my hands up. And my first thought is, these are not my hands. You know, I'm going out to eat. And then I look and I'm seeing, and now, mind you, I was a real nerd kid. I never smoked weed or did drugs or anything. But, what, you know, since then, after having dealt with cancer treatment, I do gummies and stuff now. So it's kind of funny when I describe this part. I'm looking at the wall and I'm going, whoa, I'm seeing textures I never saw before. So, you know, it's kind of humorous. But I got up, I walked through the house and I saw my sisters. And I'm like, oh, there's my sisters. And then I go in the kitchen and I'm like, oh, there's my mom. And then same with my dad. And then that evening I'm, you know, sitting in the living room while the family's watching TV. And I'm thinking, something's different. I didn't know what was going on. So for years, you know, I had some people say, oh, you were abducted by aliens. And I just like, no, it had nothing to do with that. There was no UFO, that kind of thing. You know, what could it have been? And, as I got further along in the mentorship under my uncle and was learning stuff and then started putting two and two together about the telluric currents and then time, that second time I asked him about, you know, time travel, and he said, hey, we figured that out about 100 years ago. I said, well, how? What's it done? He goes, I can't talk about that with you. You're not ready to know that. And about a year after that, again, we're getting into the late 90s, I said, what happened to me in December of 79? And he says, I'm not going to talk to you about that yet, but, and this is what he said, he goes, you will figure it out. you will figure out what you did. What I did. Without, you know, dragging it out further, the conclusion I've come to, it's hypothetical. Nobody has to believe me. You reach a point with this stuff where you cross a Rubicon, where you honestly no longer give a crap whether people believe you or not. Okay. When you have,
I totally understand that. You're just like, I don't care what you think.
Yeah, I don't care.
I don't care what you're going to say. This is what I believe.
Yeah, I know.
Is it true? I'm not 100% sure, but this is what I feel.
What I think I did. I've mentioned my associate colleague Sesheri. He and I were really digging into this time thing because I had written the novel and you know our experiences that we had, you know, each in our youth and through the years. We were really digging into time travel, the theories and ideas and stuff. And I thought, wait a minute. The first glimmer of it was in, I think it was the same year that Greg and I were having a discussion. We were at House of Pies in Los Angeles after Greg's show one night, and we were with William Moore, the infamous, you know, baddie of the UFO world who, you know, got booed off the stage in 1990 or whatever, because he admitted he was collecting for the government, you know, and the UFO people and stuff. But that's how I met Bill Moore. And we were with him and we were having a discussion about the nature of space and time. And I remember thinking about, I think it's Kepler's second law of planetary motion or something anyway. Yeah. And I came to the idea, an epiphany for me. I may not be the first guy who ever thought of this, but for me, I thought, you know what? I wonder if it's possible to jump back in your own timeline of your life. So the more I thought about this and the more Sesheri and I were talking, and we got to talking about, he works out these things called karmic frequencies that has to do with your age, when you were born and stuff. You can even predict probably when you're going to die. I think he predicted when I'm going to die. He hates when I mention that, but I think he did. It's okay. I'll be 81 if he was right, you know, long life. But
that's not bad. That's great. Yeah, yeah. 81 is great.
So I thought, I wonder if it's possible to jump back in your own timeline. And I thought, okay, how old was I that morning when I woke up? I was 16. So, you know, did I do this at 61? And then because of all the Hecate material, you got to hang with me, folks. This is a lot of stuff. And I know I'm yanking you around, but when you read my Empire of the Wheel stuff and all my books, along with the Tuatha De Danann, Hecate, the goddess, you know, the goddess of the crossroads into the underworld, basically she greets you when you die. And I figured out what the crossroad was, the triple crossroad was. And it dawned on me, wait a minute, I wonder if you can do this when you die. In other words, she stands on the triple crossroad, right? What is the triple crossroad? It's the past, present, and future, where they all come together, and they come together where she stands. So when you die, this is hypothesis, folks, when you die, you stand before Hecate and she gives you the option. You can stay in the underworld, you know, the other side, you know, for a while, or you can go on to the next life, you know, or where your next destination is, or you can take the past route and go back into the life that you just lived. And so I thought, well, I wonder if, you know, we were talking about transposition of numbers. I wonder if, you know, 16, 61, that's a transposition of numbers. And then I thought, I wonder if I died when I was 61 years old and then chose to go back. So, you know, do numbers have any, did age have anything to do with this? If you're 61, you can go back to when you're 16. If you're 51, 15, 81, 18, and so forth. You get the idea. So I thought, oh, wow, there's a concept. This is wild. You know, did I jump back into my own life? Now, think about it. When I woke up, I said, these are not my hands. Well, maybe it was, whoa, these aren't my old hands. These are my young hands again. These aren't my 61-year-old hands. And maybe when I saw my sisters, I was like, there's my sisters and they're teenagers again. there's my mom, you know, but she's alive or she's younger. There's my dad. He's alive. Whoa. Where, oh, I'm back. So I finally put it to my mentor.
Yeah.
And he would only give me a very brief response. We had a way, you know, that we would communicate where we would communicate with cold questions, right? In other words, okay, just ask a question without any context. And what it would do is if he saw that I had figured something out, my asking him the cold question would tell him that I knew, right? That of what I was talking about. So remember, he had told me in the late 90s, he goes, you're going to figure out what it is you did, when I asked him about time. Well, I asked him the question. I said, am I right about 61 to 16? That's how I worded it. I didn't go into it, just, am I right about that? And I got one word answer, yes. And that was the end of the conversation. So I have since then thought, wow, the first time or the last time I lived this life, because I accept reincarnation and that kind of stuff. The last time I lived this life, I'm thinking I died at 61 and then chose to come back.
I was wondering how, like, the 81, you've been told that was 81, but what you're saying is the previous cycle was to 61.
To 61.
Reinstated back at 16, and now you're redoing it, and you're going to possibly go to 81.
And think about it. I was diagnosed with cancer in 2020, just stage two. And I was, let's see, that was the year that I was going to turn 57 in October. Okay. So I was 56. Maybe, you know, God forbid, maybe that's how it happened. Maybe the cancer killed me in the last go around. Okay. So with that and all the other strange things, particularly the intensity of the strangeness, I've been living with high strangeness since that morning in December of 79, but it intensified. I mean, over the years, it intensified, in 2007, when I was taught by someone informally how to do remote viewing. Remote viewing opened the floodgates, led me to Hecate, led me to even more encounters with the Tuatha De Danann, led me to the Empire of the Wheel trilogy that, you know, I ended up writing, and all that mystery. And to this day, there's no going back from, you know, what it opened up.
Yeah.
And so Latitude 33, the Disneyland thing, was really my first overt step into trying to figure out my own personal mystery and just what the heck, you know, Disneyland was really designed to be. So,
and your idea on Disneyland, like you had said, it wasn't nefarious, but it was like an energy collector to take you, transport everyone almost to a different
frame of mind,
maybe. Or a different shift. It's like shifted everybody out of like this world, you know, you stepped out of that torodial current and you're in this, you're back in the grimy world, but you step into here and it's a magical place.
For the time that you're in the park, you're having just a wonderful time, forgetting that there's even an outside world. And that, I believe, was the intent. Now, I did the research on all the dark stuff you hear about Walt Disney, and I got to tell you, I know people don't like to hear this because of the nature of my book, but I found nothing to substantiate all the, some of it ridiculous things that are attributed to Walt Disney. However, the dark stuff that you could call dark or nefarious or unacceptable from Disney, that's from, you know, the Disney company long after Walt died. Okay. The putting the sexual subliminal stimulations stuff in children's movies, that's there. That was done by jerk employees. You know, we're talking decades after Walt died is when that kind of stuff started, and the greed and the, like, right now I'm not any more impressed with the Disney company than anyone else is. But yeah. Walt Disney was never a Freemason. He was in Demolay as a teenager in high school. And that was the extent of his involvement with Freemasonry. And but like I'm saying, and I looked into that and I found nothing to substantiate and I get people to get angry with me, or they get all, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, okay. You know,
like I was just talking with a guest on Tuesday night, and he was saying, you know, he's like, I don't like saying I believe in something, because he says, I'm always open to have my mind changed.
It's better to say, I think something, right? I don't like the word believe, even though I've used it 3 times, I think, already tonight.
I think we all do. It just happens. It's kind of natural. But yeah, I'm always open to, you know, I'm not set, you know, like in this industry that I'm in, you know, like I'm in the cryptids, I'm in UFOs, but with the cryptid community, there is some definitely like harsh camps. There's like the blood and, you know, flesh and blood creatures, or there's the flesh and blood, but also woo kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't like getting along. And it's like, we always have to be open to accepting that it could be something else.
What's silly about that is both of them are right, in my opinion. Just like with UFOs, some are going to be extraterrestrial. Duh. But the as Jacques Vallée said years ago and has said for years, the ET hypothesis comes nowhere near explaining thoroughly the UFO mystery. So I don't know, when these camps argue with each other, it's kind of ridiculous because they're both right, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Both right and both wrong at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what was I going to say? So I had another guest on, and he's like, what I saw was flesh and blood. Like, he had a super close encounter with a Bigfoot, but he's like, but I can't deny, he says, I don't know. It could have been magical as well. It could have been, you know, some sort of mystical beast. I don't know. What I saw was flesh and blood, but I'm still open to everything else. And I'm like, that is like the perfect, that's how we should all be. And I have a question. Mm-hmm. Oh, so we're talking about ET, and that word in itself for me is kind of, I think there's more to it. Like I really like words. And when we say extraterrestrial, which means extra land, and terrestrial means of this earth. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm like, okay, so they're extra of this earth. You know, is that what we're implying with this? You know, is that a possibility? I believe that's a possibility. Is it real?
Extra meaning external to, like, you know,
It could be, yes.
I get what you're saying, and it seems like with that word, the way you explained it and broke it down, why do we need the word ultra-terrestrial? Because it seems like extraterrestrial should include all of it. There's the extraterrestrial in the material sense, where they come from another planet, or extraterrestrial, not of this earth, from another dimension, right? But we choose to, because ET is so associated with aliens from other planets, you know, we've had to use the John Keel favorite expression, ultra terrestrial.
Yes, yes, exactly.
To delineate.
And so back to these ley lines as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in Mexico, and mm-hmm. I lived right next to a major intersection. And it was when you went into that area as well, it was called the Seville Chatoun, and it's right near where the planetary or the comet killer, you know, the one that took off the dinosaurs. It's very near that location. And I would say, like, the energy there, like, there's a temple built right on that location, and it was very, you walk into there and you feel different. You know, it feels good. You know, there is a nice open cenote, which is like an open water, fresh water.
So you're in the Yucatan.
Yes. I'm in the Yucatan Peninsula, actually, because I'm not in that location anymore. Okay. I'm in the Yucatan Peninsula, but not in the Yucatan.
Okay. Itself. Gotcha. In the Yucatan.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's beautiful here. I did have a sweater on earlier, but now I'm back to a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And I record outside, so it's I can't complain.
Oh, nice. It's beautiful there. Yeah.
It is. So you also have written some other books. I know we kind of dabbled in the Longitude 33. What are some of the other books? You said please enlighten me on these on your other books.
Well, there's the Empire of the Wheel trilogy, which started as I learned about, I told you I was continuing the research that I did in Latitude 33, and that in one of those ley lines that intersect in Disneyland extends out here, connecting to the ley lines here in the San Bernardino Valley. And I came across a ghost story in associated with our oldest extant shopping mall, Inland Center. And when I talked to the lady who had posted it, a local librarian named Ann Walker, she told me about the mystery of this woman, Cora Stanton. She goes, I think it was murder. Go look at the old newspapers. I think you'll agree. And so I did. And having been a former federal agent, I'm a professional investigator. You know, what I saw, what I did was I found what she's talking about. It happened in 1915. But what I did was then I expanded my circle of research, right? My radius to previous weeks and months. And what I discovered was in the fall, between October and early December of 1915, the newspapers were reporting about these seven mysterious deaths, three of them children who were poisoned, and they never solved who poisoned them or could even identify the poison, the toxin, and four adults, three who were alleged suicides, and one of them was a boating accident. And anyway, long story short, that ended up being a big, thick book on what I believe was a cult-themed serial murder, because all the victims, thanks to Sechery and his analysis, I could identify that all the victims were killed linked to the telluric current grid running through the San Bernardino Valley. In other words, the locations where they died were right on telluric current lines. So that was a theme. Somebody's killing these people and they're doing it consciously, on these telluric current sites. And even in that book, Sechery and I discovered that all of the known Zodiac killer victims, okay, remember, he said there were 37 more bodies out there that they never found, but the known classic Zodiac killer victims were all killed or attacked, if they didn't die, because one of them didn't die, on telluric current points. So we were able to, in our minds, you know, in our opinion, prove the one theme connecting all the Zodiac killer victims, and that is the telluric current grid. And that's a chapter in the book. Well, I started pulling threads on that trilogy. I found evidence that suggested that this mysterious Cora Stanton woman was actually, in my opinion, at a place, the associate of Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And I've got three books on this huge 7-year experience and ordeal. I was followed from my home. I was being surveilled all over the place by people, local people who had an interest in keeping this quiet. I had a weird experience with the local coroner's office. I'd requested records of, you know, two of the people who had died, you know, at that time, almost 100 years before. But boy, did I get an angry, cold response from the coroner's office looking into this 100-year-old case. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. So there's those three books. And every one of my nonfiction books, like I did Latitude 33, pulling the threads on that led me to Empire of the Wheel, led me to the Empire of the Wheel trilogy. But at the same time, with this remote viewing and my research, it led to weird stuff about Juan Cabrillo and Joan of Arc and a possible California connection. So that led to my Secret Missions series. That's five books about historical individuals who I'm convinced were involved in the secret search for lost civilizations. Okay. And they are Juan Cabrillo, Ambrose Bierce, Sir Richard Francis Burton, and Napoleon Bonaparte. The fifth book is kind of an overview to give context. And I've got a sixth one on the way, plus a follow-up to the Napoleon one. And also, I've written a book about my dad had a weird experience in the Air Force in the late 50s that involved UFO crash retrieval, getting briefed in on Roswell and just MK Ultra and all sorts of weird stuff. And he died in 2008, 2016. I said, you know what? I've got to investigate his story that he had told me since the early 70s. And that's what my book Shimmering Light is. Okay. So it appears to have nothing to do with the Empire of the World trilogy, with the Disneyland book, with the secret mission stuff about the explorers and the historical figures. However, just like all the other ones, there's evidence and signs and data connecting the Tuatha Dé Danann to his story. And it's in all of them. It's in the Secret Missions book. Hecate and the Tuatha Dé Danann are in all these books, which seem to be on different subjects. And I've got another book on breakaway civilizations and the airship mystery.
That's fascinating as well, the airship mystery. That is something that is intriguing.
And the Sonora Era Club and all that. But here's my point is all of this is connected by Hecate and this mysterious race of beings, the Tuatha Dé Danann. And that's what I mean by all of my books, one literally led to the other, and they're all connected. So the way I see it is all of these books are just what I've produced so far on this big mystery that I've stumbled into that I still can't give you the final answer on exactly what it's about. It's just been
a
weird adventure for me.
Wow. This is fascinating. This has been a fascinating conversation, Walter. I have actually a little bit of a question. Is any of the ley lines pass over near Sunset Boulevard? Any of the ones that intersect at in Disneyland?
I'm pretty sure that one of them does, because you know they all come through Southern California, and at this particular intersection, they converge right there in Anaheim. So you got one that goes north of Anaheim, and I'm pretty sure it does. I would have to have the map in front of me.
Okay.
And I have several maps for the stuff.
I'm just putting on a, I'm collaborate or like collecting all these, stories for Glitches in the Matrix. You know, I've been searching out people and I want to make a documentary on it. And the one lady who I just interviewed, she was driving on Sunset Boulevard when she was, you know, she came upon a car, turned sideways. She was going to hit this car. To her right was another vehicle. She was like, I'm going to die. And so she still swerved to the right and then swerved around, and she was screaming and she's like, I'm not ready to die yet. Next thing you know, she woke up, like she opened her eyes. She looked, there was no cars. She said she was on Sunset Boulevard at 8 p.m. On a Saturday.
No cars.
No cars. She said she drove home. There was no vehicles. She got home where she parked. She said there's no parking spaces, but she said there was no one on the street.
Right.
And so she doesn't know what happened. She's like, I don't know. Well, she has an idea, but she went into her apartment, you know, looked for her. And this was about 30 years ago. She went into her apartment and she asked, she was hoping her roommate was going to be there, but it wasn't. So she ended up phoning one of her friends and said, this is going to sound extremely strange, but who am I? And she said, okay, you're this. Like, what year is it? You know, she was asking all these questions. Yes, she was very thorough in these questions, asking this. And she's like, I know this sounds so strange. But she was like, then it was like everything kind of picked back up again and caught back up. And her roommate, like when she went to sleep, everything just went back to normal. And her theory on this is that she died, but she jumped to a different timeline or a different point in time. And she bumped that person's consciousness back into hers.
Okay.
So that person died. She moved on into this other person's life. And it was an amazing story, a very amazing story.
I love stories like that. I think there's something to this jumping timelines thing. The one example is why I think there's something to it from my experiences. I was in Iraq in November of 2003 doing my job. I was in counterterrorism. And it was after midnight, and myself and the two guys I was working with, we were riding around in a car doing what we do. And we got stopped and surrounded in an alley, in one of the back alleys of Mosul, surrounded by nine guys with AK-47s. They block our vehicles. They jump out of the back. They surround us. They lock and they're ready to go. And yeah. we're just surrounded. Now, we're not in an armored vehicle because we're trying to blend. We're in like a little Toyota, which, you know, the hot knife through butter thing, right?
Yes, exactly.
These AK rounds. And, you know, and we're wearing local garb, let's say, and wearing a jalabiya and a keffiyeh. And, you know, I've got an M4 with the collapsible stock between my knees, and my team leader who's driving the car, I'm sitting in the back. He says, don't let them see the guns. Yeah, no kidding. You know, this wouldn't be a good time for them to see our guns. And anyway,
yeah,
we survived that. It ended up being the new Iraqi police force. And at the time, they just didn't have uniforms. They were just kind of all where we noticed they were wearing matching clothes, but it's civilian clothes. For all we knew, they could have been, you know, the private security of Saddam's boys who we were looking mm-hmm. for. And, you know, it went well. We survived, even though I joked to my team leader, who's a good friend of mine. I said, hey, let's not repeat this situation tomorrow night. He's like, oh, I'm with you. But I will say that because of the struggles, and we all have struggles in our life, but because of the struggles I've had in various ways since leaving that job, there are times, you know, there are times when you get that dark cloud and, you know, I wonder, am I in hell or am I in another dimension? And then I've thought, oh my God, did I die that night? Were we shot to death right there? Did I know this was going to happen? And did I jump to an alternate timeline in which I did not die? And the consciousness that's in my body now escaped that fate. And technically this is not the dimension I started out in. Mm-hmm. If that makes so, you know, I've wondered,
it makes complete sense. It makes complete sense.
So yeah, I love stories like this lady who, you know, I'm all about hearing that stuff because weird happens.
Exactly. And it kind of like, you know, adds to the belief, you know, it gives you more validation that, okay, maybe, you know, someone else is believing this and have this experience. Maybe it's exactly what's happened to me.
Or it's just that we all live in the first world and we have the luxury to think this crazy stuff.
Fair enough. Well, Walter, I really want to thank you so much. And if you can tell our listeners and our viewers where they can find you and where they can find your books.
Sure. I have a live stream that I do a couple of episodes a week at the Walter Bosley channel on YouTube. Definitely go check it out. A lot of great stuff there. Also, my books can be found at walterbosley.com, including the Disneyland book. And my books are all print on demand, good quality, worth the wait, you know, the wait to get it, you know, because they got to print it and ship it. But, you know, you can get them there at walterbosley.com. And that's where you can find me.
Amazing. I want to say, Walter, thank you so much for making the time to be here on Codega's Codex of Curiosities. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
I did too. I hope we can do it again. And thanks again. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Click that like. If you're new here, subscribe and have the bell hit for notifications to stay up to date on all of the new content.
All right. I want to say thank you to Walter. That was more than I expected, you know, and you know, we jumped on the 33 latitude, but then it just progress from there. Portals, time travel, timeline jumping, consciousness jumping, where else would this go? So that was awesome. So again, everyone, if you have not subscribed, please subscribe. Check out the channel. Check out Walter's channel. I know he's probably got way more viewers and listeners than me, but hey, my 150 viewers, listeners, go check him out. And I want to say thank you again for joining me on this amazing evening.
I look forward to our next adventure together as we navigate the mysteries that lie ahead.
until our paths cross again. Keep your curiosity wandering and ensure the light remains lit.